But right now, time for technology news with the man they call the Gadget Detective, because frankly, he is. And he is undisputed. His name is Fevzi Turkalp. He is here. How are you, Fevzi?
Good morning. I'm good, thank you.
Lots to talk about this week. If we may just take a little cul-de-sac for just 40 seconds or so, Fevzi. This fake WhatsApp app that appeared and wasn't spotted by the Google Play Store. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so Google Play Store is the legitimate store where you're meant to get your apps from if you run an Android device, either a smartphone or a tablet. And unfortunately, you know, there's a proper WhatsApp app on there, and there was a fake one on there, and it managed to look enough like the original that more than 1 million people downloaded it. And it's quite interesting because it even appeared to be produced by a company called WhatsApp Inc., which is what appears on the genuine app. And what they did is they took the space between WhatsApp and Inc. and replaced it with another character that looks like a space but isn't a space. So it was subtly different, but not to the human eye.
So how can you expect the consumer to spot that? I would have assumed that Google Play Store would have systems in place to stop that kind of thing happening.
Well, you know, when we talk about the differences between Apple and Google, in terms of, you know, Android and iOS, one of the things that's often pointed to is the amount of pre-vetting that's done of apps before they put on the App Store. Now, that's not to say you can't have malware on you know, Apple's App Store, because it has existed, but there is far more of it on the Google Play Store. I suspect it's because they don't do the same degree of pre-vetting. So all you can really do, I mean, one of the checks that you would have done is to see the name of the author of the app. But you should look at other things, like, for example, how long has that app been available, and how many reviews are there, and are they all in the last few days?
I always look for that, and I don't touch anything that's got less than about 100,000 reviews.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you really need to be careful, because with the WhatsApp app, obviously, it would have been around for a long time, and yet this fake app will not have been, and any reviews there were on it, if fake or genuine, would be recent. So, I mean, it's a pain, because particularly when an app is, in quotes, free, although, you know, you pay for the WhatsApp app with your privacy, I would argue, but in principle, particularly when an app is free, it's very easy just to, you know, click on to download it and not worry about it and think, oh, I'll just delete it if it's no good. Now, this particular app, we're not quite sure what it was up to. There have been assertions online in sort of forums and so forth that it contained ads. That's not so bad, but also that it downloaded software onto people's phones, and goodness knows what that software does. So it is a worry. I mean, the app itself has been removed now, but, you know, it's not the first time. There was a battery monitor app that appeared on the Google Play Store back in, I think it was 2015, and that was dialing premium rate phone numbers from your
phone. God, you know, you just have to be so careful. Thank you for that, Fevzi. The president of Facebook, or the founder president of Facebook, in the light of what is in the news today, makes me smile, because he's sounding a bit of an alarm about all of this. And yet, in the BBC News today, we have a think tank set up by Tony Blair, who is warning that Britain will go down the path of irrelevance unless we get on board with new technology. So on one hand, we've got a think tank telling us we've got to get into AI and all the rest of it. And this very important person, on the other hand, saying, quotes, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains.
Yeah, and that is a quote. So this is Sean Parker, who was Facebook's founding president, and he was up on stage speaking about Facebook. And he said, I'll quote you a couple of quotes. The thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them, was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. That means that we need to give you a sort of little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content. And basically, he's saying, I no longer use Facebook because it's such a huge waste of time. It sinks so much of his time, and it changes the way that we exist, and arguably not in a good way. So when Tony Blair talks about the importance of modern technology, yes, that's fine. But unfortunately, what Facebook has become, arguably, is the soma of the people. You know, if you go and read Brave New World, there was a drug that was used to pacify populations.
Send you off to sleep.
And stop them from thinking about the things that they really ought to be thinking about. And arguably, you know, that's Facebook personified.
Well, so, there's me thinking it's Britain's Got Talent and X Factor, but no, apparently not. It's Facebook, according to, and not just according to anybody, according to somebody who founded the thing.
Yeah, well, he helped found it. And also, he's got a track record because he was the man behind Napster. If you remember Napster in the early days. So, I mean, they were doing this when people didn't, you know, people say, oh, I'm not on social media. And now, you know, billions of people are on Facebook.
And yet there are people, earlier this week for another thing that I do, I interviewed David Icke. Now, people tend to laugh and deride David Icke, but he's been talking about people being, quote, entrained by this technology. In other words, losing the power to think because it does your thinking for you. And it's looking like this might be one of the things that David Icke has predicted that may well be turning out to be true. It may be argued by those who may argue it. Have I covered myself there?
Yes,
efficiently. Got to crack on. There's a great storage device. I love storage devices because they are getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
You want to talk about something from Transcend, who are pretty big in this field, yeah?
Yeah, so Transcend, T-R-A-N-S-C-E-N-D, so it's spelled that way, are a memory storage company. They have lots of devices based around memory. Now, SD cards, these are the little cards the size of a postage stamp that go into some smartphones, but also, you know, cameras, all sorts of devices, camcorders. They're going in two directions, really. You've got the ones that are going up and up in capacity, and that's good for some types of uses. But then you've got the ones that are getting faster and faster and faster. Now, the one I want to look at today is the latter category. It goes faster and faster. So this is a SD card, size of a postage stamp. It's called the SDXC UHS-2 Ultimate. I'm sorry, that's a mouthful. What you have to know about this is it can read at 285 megabytes per second, and it can write to the card at 180 megabytes per second. That is hugely fast. That's about three times faster than the previous generation of fast cards.
And so when I make my unexplained podcasts and I tend to copy them off to SD cards so that I can listen to them on other devices and check them, normally the MP3 version, which is what I copy, probably if it's an hour and 10-minute show, will take something like 12 seconds, maybe 18 seconds to get onto the SD card. What you've just told me mean that this thing will do it much faster than that?
Potentially, but it's most useful for really big files. So, for example, people shooting 4K video produces very big and cumbersome files to copy and distribute. And also, if you shoot on a sort of digital SLR camera with RAW, you know, this is the uncompressed version, or as I tend to shoot, I shoot, when I hit the button on my camera, I shoot one RAW image and a JPEG image at the same time. And then when I've got that in rapid mode where it's firing off shot after shot, you really need a fast memory card for that.
Look at Cecil B. DeMille here.
I love it. So it's got
capacity.
It's got the speed. So it's not one of the high capacity. It's either 32 gig or 64 gig, which is ample, but there are higher capacity cards, but not at this speed. Yes. But to get the best from it, don't just be sticking it in your memory card slot on your computer, because it won't give you the full speed. So there's a device, again, from Transcend. You buy it for £15. Oh, by the way, that one was the 32 gig, about £43, and the 64, about
£95. £95 sounds like a huge amount of money for a 64 gig card.
Can I tell you, the last time I saw a card, there was a contemporary from another manufacturer with this sort of spec. It's £300.
Okay. Oh, so that's good. Get the best out of it, you've got to get a reader or this reader.
Yeah. Well, this one's called an RDF9K. And it can almost keep up with the card, okay? And it's £15, and it just plugs into USB. And it's really nice because it does compact flash, SD, micro SD, even Sony's memory stick standard. Right.
So you're expecting me to go into a store and ask for a UHS-2 3 Ultimate 64 megabyte,
yeah,
together with an RDF9K USB 3.13 UHS-2 card reader.
You know what I'm going to do?
God, help us.
Twitter at Gadget Detective. I'm after this, I'm just going to post a link to both of them because it is such a mouthful.
And you can go to the same place if you want to ask you a question. Febzy, thank you very much. We're out of time.
Cheers.
I'll speak with you in 7 days from now, or even sooner. Take care, Febzy.
Bye now.
7 minutes to 8, BBC Radio Berkshire.